This is Dr. Marvin Dunn, and I am the Storyteller. Our topic today, the Battle of Negro Fort. With help from my brother, Dr. Raymond Dunn, and assistance from my nephew, Raymond Dunn Jr.
Thanks a lot, bro, for that kind introduction. Bro, the Battle of Negro Fort. How interesting. And I had no idea, none, that there was such a thing in history as the Negro Fort. So, when was it established?
Well, in 1814, the British sent a man, an agent, into Florida to recruit blacks, particularly slaves, to become defenders of this fort that they intended to build and did build on the Apalachicola River. Here's the problem. The British had lost their colonies. They were now off the continent. They were in the Bahamas, but angry, upset that they had lost their colonies, and now this new upstart nation, America, is a problem for them. So the British want to create as many problems for America as they could.
Of course.
And some people say they still do that, but that's another story.
And no, don't go there.
I won't go there. So what they do is there's a place on the Apalachicola River called Prospect Bluff.
Okay, let's be a little more specific. Are we talking somewhere near Pensacola?
Good question. Yes, we are.
Okay.
The Apalachicola River is east of Pensacola.
Okay.
And it runs out of Georgia and up into the belly of the South.
Right.
And it drains down through North Florida and empties in the Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
That's the major river in Florida. So what the British do is they build a fort on Prospect Bluff, which is a high point looking over that river.
Okay.
And 14 miles downriver is the Gulf of Mexico. That's where that river empties into the Gulf of Mexico. Now, Ray, this was a very, very important commercial avenue into the South. If you could block commerce on the Apalachicola River, that was a very, very big deal.
Exactly.
So what they do is the British build this fort. They put a cannon overlooking the river and ammunition, weapons, and they send this guy, this Lieutenant Echoes, into Florida to buy slaves from their owners and then have these slaves who agreed to go to Negro Fort to defend it become free. So Nichols goes throughout North Florida buying slaves from their owners, and these men agreed to go. They weren't forced to go, but they knew that once they went with Nichols, they would then be free men at this place that he was directing them to. So you had by 1814 this fort well-established, overlooking the river. And by that time, maybe as many as 800 blacks living along the Apalachicola River on both sides of the river for 3 miles. And most of these folks, Ray, were slaves who had come from Pensacola. In fact, over half the slaves in Pensacola left Pensacola and moved to Negro Fort. And others also came in and settled along that river.
Now, the Negro Fort, of course, is like a military structure to protect and defend, I know. But when you say that many blacks moved there, they didn't live inside of the fort. So
good
what
question.
Was the community like?
No, they lived along the riverbanks on both sides.
The
they farmed,
okay.
They lived off the river, they were free. Whenever there was trouble, they all went into the fort for protection.
Right.
The fort itself was defended by men who were there for that very purpose. They were armed and prepared to defend that fort. It was a free black community in 1814, and not only attracting blacks, but there were also some Indians as well living with the permission of the blacks close to Negro forts, Choctaw
I'm trying to follow you now.
Okay.
Okay. You've got previously slaves, now defenders of a fort that plantation owners sold for this purpose. Is that
correct?
Right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Correct.
You've got a community of farmers and all this stuff coming together. So what is the threat? What is the big threat to the United States?
That's a good question. The threat, Ray, was that if you had armed blacks with a cannon overlooking the Apalachicola River, 14 miles upriver from the Gulf of Mexico, how were ships trying to get into the belly of the South going to pass that point without being endangered?
So, well, part of what I don't understand is, of course, you got a point there. You got a cannon, you got blacks there in the fort. Why didn't white people come and do this? They build the fort and then whites come and defend.
Because at that time, Ray, Spain was in control of Florida, not America. So this is Spanish Florida, 1814. You know, it was 1821 when the Spanish finally left. So this is Spanish Florida. So these people were living as free people in Spanish Florida at the time of this attack. A good question.
Okay.
So anyway, at that, you know, Andrew Jackson was president at the time, and Jackson was determined to have this fort destroyed because of its threat to American commerce on the Apalachicola. What did he do?
Yeah, that's my question. So obviously something happened. I mean, we wouldn't be telling the story. So get to the essence of the whole thing. Well, what happened at the Negro Fort?
On the morning of July 27th, 1816, American gunboats, at least three, approach Negro Fort from the south, moving towards the fort. And at the same time, there were American troops on land, not quite ready to attack, but they were some distance away, also approaching the fort. So the gunboats get within range, and by this time now the people have all crowded into the fort for protection. So you have now several hundred people inside that fort, most of them women and children. So in order to get the appropriate range for their guns, the gunboats begin firing practice shots at the fort. And on the ninth practice shot, that round hit the rear of the fort where the ammunition was stored. And the fort blew up.
The entire fort?
Well, I wouldn't say the entire fort, but enough of it blew up to make the fort no longer defensible. And the impact of the explosion was such that bodies were thrown up into the pine trees. So for weeks after this attack happened, by the time they got American troops there to the site, you had body parts up in these pine trees that had been up there for days and days and days, attended by vultures. They say they couldn't get the buzzards to leave the bodies when the troops got there to try to clean up this mess. So this ninth practice shot blows up the fort, kills many, many, many hundreds of people, mostly women and children. The fort falls. Of course, the British take over. Some survivors manage to get away, but not many. And this was the destruction of the Negro Fort.
So what was the fort made of?
Earthen logs. Most forts were made of that at the time. They used what was available in the environment to make forts. And after this happened, Ray, American troops buried the survivors behind the fort. I've been to it several times. It's now a national park. But behind the fort, they dug up some graves. A couple of them are mass graves, then individual graves as well, and buried these bodies behind the fort and named it the Renegade Cemetery, which really hurt my feelings.
Yeah, cemetery. That's what I'm dealing with right now. Right.
See, once they call us
renegades, when I say us, I mean blacks. That was a black fort. Now you blow it up and you bury us and you call us renegades? We were not renegades.
It was the rationalization for killing them. If you kill women and children and you manage to demonize the adults, then it makes it a justification to do what you did. It was the same term given to American Indians.
That's what I was about to say to you. Exactly. You told another story of how different Indian tribes were called renegades, and one of those tribes were the Seminole, you said.
Well, the Seminoles were called Seminoles because they refused to be removed from their lands and sent out west.
In this case, though, let's go back to the fort. We're talking about the fort. It's really an awful story that so many people were killed, blown up. It was called the Negro Fort. So, did they memorialize the Negro Fort? Can you go and visit now the Negro Fort?
Yes, you can. It is a national park.
But is it the Negro Fort?
Well, I'll get to that part. The name's been changed.
Then it's not the Negro Fort. That's
it's one of those stories that has been whitewashed so effectively in history. After the troops cleared out what they call the Renegades, they buried in the back of the fort in what they call the Renegade Cemetery, which I found insulting because it demonized the people who were killed, including women and children. I've been to the site. They renamed it. It's no longer called the Renegade Cemetery. They gave another name to it. But the fort itself is no longer called Negro Fort. It's called Fort Gadsden. after a white man named Lieutenant James Gadsden, who was an American officer, military officer, who was left in charge of what had been the Negro Fort. It became a supply depot, a supply place for the Army, and Gadsden was left in charge of it.
I'm going to assume that that is in Gadsden County.
No, I'm not sure what the county is now. Gadsden County was named after James Gadsden.
Right. Well, that's my point. If it's named after him, wouldn't it be in his county?
It's only named after him because Andrew Jackson's forces left him in charge.
Okay.
But I don't think that the Negro Fort today is located in
Gadsden County.
In Gadsden County. Gadsden County, it's just a recognition of his serving the country in that way. But the point about the name change is this. It is another example of the whitewashing of black history. The removal.
I would prefer to say the erasing of black history.
Well, it wasn't totally erased because if you go to Fort Gadsden today, there's a marker that does make reference to this place having been formerly known as the Negro Fort.
That won't do it for me, bro. I'm sorry.
it didn't do it for me either. But I'll tell you something. If you go to Fort Gadsden, which is very, very rural, it's a really, really uninhabited area, Ray, the horse flies were absolutely menacing. I couldn't get away from them. The second time I went, I knew to take protection. So I took Raid. It seemed to have attracted them. One reason I wouldn't go back out there is those horse flies, I'm sure, are just as prevalent now as they were when I was last out there 2 or 3 years ago. It's a sad place to visit because you realize how many lives were lost and how tragic it was, and then to have the history of it almost erased.
But, bro, I tell you, I've sat with you through many of your stories, but I don't think I've sat through any story any sadder, especially the ending for me, than this one. And it's a sad day in history for me when you get to a point where you've got a community of blacks and you have defenders of a black fort and it's blown up by a United States military force, then renamed something else to erase, in my opinion, a part of black history.
Well, that's why we're doing these shows.
Don't like the ending, but our audience will understand.
Let's hope.
And that's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
We thank you for listening to The Storyteller, a production of MR2D Media. This and other stories are available at dunhistory.com, tbeunfiltered.com, or in print, Miami in the 20th Century by Dr. Marvin Dunn.